Oh, you're on your Wi-Fi.
I am on the Wi-Fi here, so we will have an actual strong and steady.
So I don't need to.
You could record it as well if you want.
Oh, I'm so tired.
All right, we've got the catching yawns. Mm-hmm. It is 10 past 10 on day 29 of Atlanta to the Atlantic. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Sarah.
I'm
Ashton. Oh. Yeah. Edgar's over there.
And
Jordan will get to. And Atlanta to the Atlantic is a project where we are traveling on a river, on, well, three rivers, South River, Okmulgee River, Altamaha River.
From Atlanta to the Atlantic on the water in kayaks over a period of 40 days.
40 days. Yeah, this is actually something that is interesting because we've been saying 42 days over our last several dispatches, and we're not quite sure where 42 came from, but I did, in a long stretch of river today, I was, like, calculating it again, and I was like, it's definitely only 40 days, so we're only going to get to day 40. It's not 42 days, which makes it seem all the shorter, and yeah, like, oh my gosh, we're nearing the end.
So today, we finished day 29, we saw the end of the Okmulgee River and the beginning of the Altamaha. So of the three rivers that we are traveling in this project, the South River is the one that we're most sort of connected to in terms of the origination of where the project is sort of began from and where it's destined, where we're doing focusing a lot of our work, but it's also the shortest in length and the longest by far. It is Okmulgee, and we have just today
completed it. Oh my goodness, that is so crazy.
And so
we only have 125 miles. Yeah.
Well, plus the distance from Darien to Sapelo.
Yeah, that's true. We did the first 8 miles of the Altamaha today.
So today Edgar's in town. That's Sarah's husband, and has joined us for a few days. But I set out early. It's much better for me to be able to get out when the sun is low, and to then stop between the highest points of the sun. So I got to head out on my own this morning, which was really lovely. Headed out at, I got on the water about 7:28. And
about 7:28?
Yeah, well, I was going to say about 7:30, but then I thought, you know, actually I looked at the clock, so
I'm not sure, because I started the live stream at 7:32, and that's like when it was before you left. Anyway.
So I set out.
Around then.
And it was really beautiful and really peaceful, and, you know, the sun coming up over the water has a completely different feel to it than it burning high in the sky or coming down, so it was really nice to be able to experience that, and the sounds as well, and the people. I met a lot of people on the river, and had brief conversations with them, but the kind of morning people going fishing was something it was nice to be a part of. And I saw two huge fish. One I saw it in its entirety, and it's about 5 feet. It was huge. It jumped out of the water, and usually you hear the fish jump, and by the time you look at where they've jumped, they're already back in. But I heard a jump, and I didn't even speedily look over. I just sort of slowly looked over, and this fish was still flying in the air, and it was enormous. It's like I couldn't understand how big it was. It wasn't very close to me. It was a kind of wide part of the river. So it was like lateral to me, but like a good distance away. So even though I screamed after it went in, when it landed back in, I didn't feel actually in danger. It was more like, oh my God, I just saw a 5-foot fish jump really high in the air. Just pretty amazing.
That is amazing.
And then passing through Lumber City, we didn't talk about this at all, but I was really taken with the sound, the sonic.
Did you do a recording?
I did, yeah. And it was this, like, all of the, I think it was just the timber. I'm assuming it's timber.
Mm-hmm.
But the sounds of the machinery working were pretty, it was
loud.
I mean, it was constant. Loud. I mean, it was constant, but it was also, like, very, it was very diverse, all of the different sounds that kind of came out of it, and you had a lot of variation and a lot of musicality to it, which is what I was really taken with. You had, you know, a lot of drones, you had a lot of percussives, you had a lot of melodies that came through, and all the while overlapping with all the different sort of bird song and animal sounds that and water sounds. So was, you know, still cool, and the greens were really dark because the sun wasn't like sort of washing everything out, and I had a nice time going through that section and experiencing all those different kind of clashing sensibilities.
I was really taken by, as we approached Lumber City, how the smell hit all of a sudden. I could smell cut wood. And it was just interesting because I think there's several times on the river that we've had where the olfactory sense or the scent, like smell, has been present, but that was one I wasn't necessarily expecting. I heard the sound first, and then all of a sudden the smell was there, and it was very intense.
That must have ripened with the heat, because you left a few hours later.
2 hours, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. You didn't smell it didn't, at all?
No. I mean, I smell a lot of scent. Or maybe they had just been a different place in their harvesting process, so maybe they weren't actually cutting the wood at the time that I was going through.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd be interested to listen to the sound you heard, too, because there was, like, for us, I think it was more of a, it was more drones. Mm. I didn't hear melodies. Mm. Kind of a constant cutting is what it sounded like.
Mm.
And it made me think about how last night we were like, what's that sound? And I think I thought it was the train going through, but I think it was just the constant timber mill.
No, there was a train as well.
Yeah, there was a train as well, but I think the timber was actually being cut as well.
Yeah.
Like, it seems like, or I deducted from that there's like a constant machine happening. Mm-hmm. Edgar, do you want to say something you're looking
for? What I thought is, you know, with the strong currents, like, how come that there's fish at all upstream. You know, all the fish would flow downstream because the current has it, so. But they can spend their entire life trying to stay upstream. But if they don't work to stay upstream, they will just go with the flow and end up downstream. So all the fish would be downstream.
That has nothing to do with Lumber City, but it is an interesting thought.
There was
very
strong currents to stop it, and there was fish everywhere.
Yeah.
How the hell do they stay upstream?
They have to work hard.
They must be working all day long to stay upstream.
Yeah.
That's a tough life. Because if they relax, then they go with the flow, just like we do.
How do fish swim upstream? That's Edgar's deep thought for the day.
Well, I think there's probably different. I don't actually know, so I'm just making it up. But I think there's different currents, like at different depths in the waters. Like there's different flows.
Yeah, but there's currents after that, but it doesn't matter. The bottom sides, so the big fish that you saw,
yeah,
they must swim upstream to stay upstream, otherwise they'll just end up in
Chicago. Yeah. Fish are hard workers. That's I think, what we've learned.
Yeah. So how do they know that to stay upstream?
I think it's like in their DNA. They know. They know.
So we went to... So I stopped off at about 11:30 at somewhere, because I had the GPS today, the Garmin, and it stopped. It was only programmed to mile 4, but I hadn't really realized that, and so it kind of kept telling me I was getting further away from my next destination, which I knew was wrong, but I didn't know in what way it was wrong, so I kind of kept watching it, but like figuring out, okay, well, like, where is there a little oxbow that I've gone across, or is there an oxbow, or is there a way that the river has changed itself? And so I ended up going a little bit further than I had kind of intended, but I wanted to stop by 11:30, really. So I did, and I did, and I found an amazing place to siesta with the softest sand that you could put your, and you could lay a blanket out and put your feet in the warm water and be in great shade. And I hung out there for a couple of hours until Sarah and Edgar came on. Yeah. It was like I fell on the wall.
We arrived 2 hours later, so because we left 2 hours later, and I was gonna say that another thing, I guess the changing currents was really, we went through a section that was really where the winds were very strong, and we were really paddling against the wind. And just like the way, as the river widens, the way that the currents change and shift, and everything's kind of constantly changing, is just really fascinating to me. That was a big takeaway of today. I think also, yeah, we didn't actually see that much wildlife on this section, but it made me think about, or you said talking about the fish made me think about two other days, which I think I failed to mention, but there's like, was it yesterday? No, it was 2 days ago. There were two like turkey vulture moments that I had where there was this set of turkey vultures that, as this is when I was on my solo time with because Rachel and her family were going, they were stopped, and I decided to keep going forward, and I came across one sandbar where there were all these turkey vultures, and they literally, like, they were watching me, and they spread their wings out like this, like they just opened up their wings like, and like a cape, and it was big and imposing, and they were all like watching me go, and I was like, oh, okay, they're protecting something. And there were probably like 5 or 6 of them, and they were all doing the same thing, but it was so interesting, and it was such a choreography, and I think I tried to take a photo, but it didn't really work. And then at the next sandbar, because I kept on wanting to stop, the next sandbar, there was another set of turkey vultures, and then they, like, instead of doing their wing cape thing, they, like, took off, and they flew, and then they were, like, hovering over me, and I was like, I'm alone, and they see that I'm vulnerable, and, but I was like, I'm big, I am a big kayak, and I just tried to, like, power through it, but it was, that was, like, a very interesting encounter with turkey vultures. And I think I also forgot to mention the owl that was a few days back, that I just came very close to this owl. I've never been so close to an owl before. It was like right there. It was probably like from here to the wall. It was just like watching me, and like cocked its head and like looked at me. And then I tried to take out my phone to take a photo, and then it flew away. But it's, and it's, there are so many moments like this that have happened that are like, that I'm trying to ingrain in my memory, because I know I wasn't able to capture it in a photograph. And so, and yet there's like all these very precious kind of snapshots that I want to retain in my brain. So I keep on thinking about those things. Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess I'll also say, when I went through the I went through the confluence a little bit after you two did, and I had a moment of being in the center of it where I was just sort of at a standstill, and I was trying to take video, but it wasn't really working, and then all of a sudden I was like, I need to get through this. And I turned around and went out the other side, and then ended up seeing Norman and his kid, Jace, who were at, there's a house that's like right at the place where the Oconee and Okmulgee meet. And we'd seen that before, because this section, actually this was interesting today to do this section that Scott had taken us on 6 miles of it in October last year. And I kept on looking out for like the landmarks or the things that I remembered. There were a few things. I tried to find the tree that that the photo, that we have a photo on the live stream thing that is lovely. The light was hitting it perfectly, but couldn't find that tree again. But anyway, we'd seen this house and wondered like who owns this house? What is the story of this house? And then today Norman and Jace were there, and they are awesome, and Norman takes care of the house, he's the caretaker, and they were visiting, and they get to use it and get to hang out, and it was, and they had some little puppies, and so I had a really lovely conversation with them just as I pulled off out of that intense moment, and then glassy water. I think you said that already. But, and it opened up, and now the Altamaha is about twice as wide as what we've been paddling. It's very different.
Yep.
And yet the same.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
I think that's a good...
And then we paddled... Well, let's just say briefly.
Yeah.
Then we paddled. We decided to paddle an extra 9.5 miles to both take off some distance for our future days, which we may have tacked on a lot of more than.
We don't have a very good plan. We didn't have a very good plan for the next few days. So we've got a day off tomorrow, but we've got to cane it the next 3 days after that. 3.5 days after that, so.
So we just knocked out 9.5, which is good.
Yeah.
So hopefully that will help us. And also because we wanted to get to Benton Lee's Steakhouse, which is the steakhouse on the Altamaha that I first read about in Denise Ray's book and then looked it up, and now everybody talks about it. But, yeah, it's, and now we're at Scott's place, which is really nice.
Yeah. And we've got a day off tomorrow.
Yay for the day off.
And we can shower again. Which is wonderful.
Amazing.
Okay.
All right. Good night.
Good night.